Well, good morning. How are we doing this morning? Warm enough for you this weekend? We are in our third week of this series of How to Neighbor. And part of the reason why we're doing this series is addressing a little bit of when Jesus said to, you know, the most important thing, of course, being to love God, but then also to love your neighbor as yourself. And so there's these two pieces. There's this vertical response to God that we're called to do, and then there's this horizontal response that is connected to our loving God. And so we're to love our neighbor as ourselves. So it's a really good question to ask, who is our neighbor? Because if we can't identify our neighbor, we're going to do a poor job of following through with what God has asked us to do with this. Your neighbor, of course, as we have been learning, is everyone. It's all the people around you. And it's very, very specifically the people that God has put in your path. These are your coworkers and your neighbors. These are your family members and your friends. These are the individuals that you come across, at the grocery store or at the gas station, the person pumping their gas next to you. They're especially the people that God puts on your eyes as you examine the world. You ever notice, like, all of a sudden there's something that you notice about a person, maybe a struggle that they're going through trying to change a tire, or maybe it's a struggle they're going through. Like for me yesterday, I was getting gas over here at Hy-Vee. And as you're pulling in off of Sycamore into there, to me it's pretty cut and dry. It's pretty easy to pull in and pull right up to a pump. But there was a gal that was stuck right where everybody wanted to be, and all people could do around her was honk their horn. And so I was waiting patiently for her. The horn on my Jeep doesn't even work, so I had no option to honk. But just be clear, full integrity on this. But at the same point, all of a sudden I no longer saw a white vehicle, but I looked into the vehicle. You ever done that? You know, it's always the vehicle, and you don't even care who's in it. You're just kind of upset at whoever it is. And I looked inside, and it was a senior citizen. I'm not saying that all senior citizens are going to park in really weird places where everybody's trying to drive. She could not get to a pump. She could not figure out how to safely or how to maneuver this. And all of a sudden, my heart went out to her to the point where I wanted to get out of my vehicle and ask her if I could help her get to the pump. And she kind of looped around, and more people were honking, and eventually she made her way out of there, down Sycamore she went, and I envisioned that she ran out of gas, and it was hot, and she died on the side of the road. I read the paper. That didn't happen, from what I understand. Do you know, God puts things on your mind or through your eyes that he doesn't have others see. That is your neighbor at that moment. Because I believe that people are in need, and God interjects that need with your presence. Sometimes it's very specific where they will pray for a need, and you become the miracle in that person's life. Other times, they are just in a state of frustration or suffering or difficulty of some sort, and God still puts you in that path and helps you see that. So when God says, it is very important that you love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, but equally as important, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Care for others like you do for yourself. And we need to pay attention to that. So this series is about how to neighbor and who those neighbors are. Today, I want to talk about our neighbors that are in poverty. So what is poverty? Who is poor? I think when we think about poverty, we have a lot of opinions on this. But who is poor? What is poverty? Are people just lazy? Is poverty a choice that we make? As Christians, what are we to do with the poor? And are we helping them? Are we enabling them? Are we hurting them when we step in? And these are the real questions that we want to look at when we talk about this area of poverty, especially as Christians dealing with this issue. And today I want to give you a biblical perspective that I want you to hear, and I want you to understand it regardless of your experience previously with poverty or poor people or poor ideologies, political ideologies, family heritage, or any other factor, whether it be social or economic. Poverty in the world is not hard to see. We see poverty all around us. People are dying from a lack of food and shelter at the rate of 8 people per minute. Do you know that number? People are dying in this world from a lack of basic needs at the rate of 8 people per minute. That's a staggering number. And it's the result of things like governments and their choices and decisions, famines, war, disease, lack of medical resources, you name it. There's a lot of reasons why this is happening. But poverty is not having the basic things that you need to sustain adequate life. Poverty in America is extremely difficult to identify or define. It is anything but accurate. You cannot go to a place and discover what the poverty is in America depending on the sites that you go to and what metrics they're using to try and make sense of what poverty is or how they might be defining what poverty is. It was determined back in the 1960s when President Johnson launched the War on Poverty. That was kind of the catchphrase of his day. And the government determined at that time in the 60s how much money a person or a family needed in order to define what they call the poverty line, which you've probably heard that phrase many times, and it's probably as confusing for you as it is for anybody else. In 2016, the U.S. government determined that the number that a family needed, the amount of money that a family needed to be above the poverty line was $24,600 a year. For a single working adult, 3 kids, that means that they need to be making a minimum of $11.80 an hour to make that $24,600. This poverty line that is set up by our U.S. government does not factor in non-food costs like childcare or transportation, and does not factor into what we would call relative cost, which is associated with different cities, like the cost to live in San Francisco versus Sioux Falls. Do you think there'd be a difference? It'd be a radical difference. It does not factor into these various things. And after our country has, in some ways, sacrificially spent trillions of dollars on poverty, over 50 years, we have not moved the needle on poverty as a country. Very little change in these numbers, and that's a bummer. Dollars don't help the situation. It has helped in specific situations, of course. We can pull out where it has helped someone here or helped someone there in an immediate need that someone might have, but it has not dented the issue of poverty, let alone ended it. So I want to look at this from a bit of a different perspective this morning than just what we hear in the news and what is taught to us on a day-in and day-out basis. To start with, I think I'm going to end with this today as well, but I wanted to start with this philosophical idea called the ethics of care. If you've ever heard of the ethics of care, this philosophical idea, simply stated, ethics of care is when we care for those that we love. And now that shouldn't be rocket science. Do you care for people that you love? You get some of you are kind of, meh. Do you care for people you love? Does the amount of closeness to you relationally impact the amount you're willing to help that person? I'm not baiting you here. This is just basic, right? This is normal, right? Ethics of care basically says there are people in my inner circle, and I'm more willing to help someone in my inner circle than someone that's not in my inner circle, no matter how far away from that they are. People that are close to your inner circle, you might help a little bit. A coworker at work all of a sudden has a need, and someone in the break room says there's a hat in there, and they throw a couple bucks in there. Okay? That's outside your, really, that idea of that ethics of care. It's a little outside your circle, but you might still be willing to give. But if there's a hat on the sidewalk that says, some guy named Bill has a need, throw some money in here, you're probably most likely going to walk by, right? Unless Bill is your child. Do you see the difference? This is not good or bad. This is just the way we do life. You obviously can't care at the level that you would care for your child for everything in the world, right? I mean, you can't solve all the problems of the world. To wear that weight of responsibility, you would have a lot of time in therapists and counselors trying to work through this intense feeling that you have of hopelessness of being able to solve all the problems in the world. But ethics of care is a real thing that we deal with. You are going to care more about the condition of your own family than you are about a starving child in Uganda, even if the child in Uganda's situation is more severe than anyone in your immediate sphere of influence. And this is why organizations are always trying to get you to give to the poor and get you to take that person they're trying to give it to and get it in your inner circle. They want to include it in your ethics of care. So they show a photo. They show living conditions. They have the person write to you so that you feel more connected. The more connected they can get you to feel to that need, the more you will put them in your area of your circle, your ethics of care, and the more chances are you will continue to give to that and help in that situation. So they're desperately trying to figure out how to get that into your circle. It's important for them. Because of this issue of ethics of care, most people do not feel a moral responsibility to help those in poverty. Let me explain that a little bit more. We don't necessarily feel a moral responsibility to help those in poverty because you didn't cause that person to be poor, and you never agreed along the way to help all people who are poor. I mean, you go into your world, right, and you see people that are in need. You didn't cause their poverty, and you also did not take on any kind of agreement ahead of time. When you were born in this world, you didn't have to sign on a dotted line, I will take care of all poor people. It's outside that sphere of influence for you, and so you don't feel that moral responsibility to help. And if you do decide to help someone who is in need, let's say there's someone on the side of the road, and they've got their tin can out there, and they're asking you to throw a few bucks in there. When you throw a few dollars in there, again, you don't feel like that was your moral responsibility, but you give yourself a moral pat on the back, don't you? I did something good. It wasn't required of me, but out of the goodness of my heart, my faith in Jesus, whatever it might be, I decided to step in an area I'm not responsible for, but yet still help someone that's in need. It's kind of like moral extra credit. But if you don't help, you try to, as best you can, tell yourself that you don't have any reason to feel bad about it. You can just as easily walk by the person that has the can as help the person, and you don't have to feel bad about it because you didn't cause them to be poor, and you have not signed any document or have any agreement that you have agreed to help all people that are poor. So you can just walk by. If you choose to drop in, it's like moral extra credit. Therefore, we do not, as a people, give sacrificially to serious needs in the world as we would if they were our own children or loved ones going through the same thing. That's normal. That's natural. That's a reality. These are just what I would call facts of philosophy, if there is such a thing as a fact in philosophy. It's not an indictment. It's not a guilt trip. But we have to at least accept or understand why it is that we do what we do. Why do you help some people and you don't help others? It has to do with this ethics of care, the circle of influence, those that you are willing to help and those that you don't feel an obligation to help, but may on any given day, depending on how it may connect with you. So what is our obligation? Jesus said this in John chapter 12, verse 8. I think it's very important to see what Jesus has to say on this subject matter. He said, "You will always have the poor among you." Always. This is something we always have with us. This side of heaven, there will be those that have and those that have not. We see this in our world. We have people that are fighting up against this. There are other people that are trying to explain it, but there are those that have and those that have not. Those that have not will be for a myriad of reasons. Some will be for causes that are their own cause, some form of laziness. Others might be due to some kind of geographic suffering, but they have not for a myriad of reasons. But it has usually little to do with their choices. We don't always think of that. We think it's always their choice, but many times it is not their choice. And those that have don't always help, and that could be for their own myriad of reasons as well, like ignorance in what the situation is, or maybe it's as bad as cruel indifference to another individual. But the Bible tells us to help the poor, over and over again. In fact, in Deuteronomy, it says this. Deuteronomy 15:4 says, there should be no poor among you. So Jesus said, the poor will always be with you. And Deuteronomy says, there should be no poor among you. See the tension? Why should there be no poor among us? Because I think if we do what God is telling each one of us to do, poverty would be and should be obliterated. Our faith in Jesus compels us to respond to suffering, issues of poverty, with an action that is congruent with what Jesus said that he would do. In fact, in 1 John 3:17, if someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? Okay, I want you just to read that a couple of times just to yourself. How you respond to that verse. I think here, in this second line here, brother or sister, person, another person in need. Brother or sister, you could think of that as a maybe another follower of Jesus even. But I think Jesus is trying to push that ethics of care to a wider circle than just, you know, a few people that we might identify. Saying, if someone has enough money to live, and again, how we define that is so crazy. You know, what one person defines as enough money and what another person says, I just don't have enough. There are some people that are just never enough, right? That's another whole issue of the heart and whether we're satisfied with anything. But truly, from a biblical definition, do you have enough to eat? Do you have a roof over your head? Will you live tomorrow because of what you do have? Not do you have all the things that you want, but do you have what you need? Jesus says, if you've got enough for that, and you see someone who doesn't, and you don't have compassion in your heart, you don't do something about it, how? Tell me, how can God's love be in that person? If you don't show compassion to someone who doesn't have when you do have. So Jesus is really challenging us on this. And remember that biblical compassion, we talked about this a few months back, but biblical compassion is action. It's not feeling. Feelings help no one, right? I feel horrible that you are so poor. I feel horrible your family has no food. And I hope that brings you some comfort. Because I'm going to have a hard time sleeping tonight. It's not helpful. Biblical compassion is action. Biblical compassion is getting messy and stepping into this situation and helping a person that is in need of help. You want to give some examples throughout Scripture as to what this looks like. This is the Good Samaritan story. This is compassion in action. This is the year of Jubilee when all debts are forgiven. This is the story of Boaz and Ruth. This is the story of the prodigal son. This is the story of the man who asked Jesus how to inherit eternal life. It is in the words that it is better to give than to receive. Now, the Bible defines poverty as those that suffer. Not as a result of those that are suffering as a result of not doing for themselves, but as a result of being oppressed by the circumstances around them. And I think it's very important we understand that the Bible defines poverty in that way. Those that are suffering as a result of not something that they personally did. Our world doesn't like to hear that. We like to just put, if you don't have what you need, no thought as to why you're in that situation. Everybody's lumped together. The Bible does delineate these two and says poverty, biblically, that we're to help with are for those that are in a situation that is not as a result of their lack of doing. In other words, if you're putting yourself purposefully in harm's way and you're harmed, the Bible would say, well, that was dumb and you shouldn't have done that. But for those that are harmed, not as a result of what they have done, but because of how things are impacting them, that is where compassion is to jump in, and we are to step into those situations. In fact, in 2 Thessalonians, it clearly states this. As Paul says these words, talking about that the Bible is clear about not helping those that are just flat out lazy in their world. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 through 12 says, even while we were with you, we gave you this command. These are Paul's words. He said, Those unwilling to work will not get to eat. Okay? Hey, let me just pause it for a minute. Why? Huh? Why? You see, Paul is emphasizing here that we all need to do our part in providing for ourselves, and in providing for ourselves can also provide for others. But if you're unwilling to provide for yourself, please do not ask others to provide for you, if you are unwilling to do it. So those unwilling to work will not get to eat. Yet we hear that some of you are living idle lives, refusing to work and meddling in other people's business. And we command such people and urge them in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and work to earn their own living. We are called to work to earn our own living, to take care of our own needs, to get up off our couch and to get the job that we need to get, to work, to do the things that we need to do to provide for ourselves and for our families and not expect somebody else to provide for us. Okay? That's a biblical understanding. There is a value to do what you can do for yourself. There's dignity in that. But when you can't provide for yourself, for whatever reason that might be, that is when the call is for God's people to step in. Let me define a couple things of what poverty is not. Poverty is not having to use a flip phone instead of a smartphone. That is not poverty. You are not poor because you have a flip phone and everyone else has a smartphone. That's not poverty. Poverty is not being unable to buy a Christmas gift. That is not poverty, being unable to buy a Christmas gift. Poverty is not having to eat ramen noodles. That is not the definition of poverty, being only able to eat ramen noodles and not able to eat fancier kinds of noodles. That's not poverty. Poverty is not being able to sustain life. And poverty is also the suffering of the innocent. Poverty is not being able to sustain life, and it is also the suffering of the innocent. So it is true. Here in Sioux Falls, there are parents who are undernourishing their children so that they can buy drugs. It's true. There are parents that are undernourishing their children so that they can have a data plan through Cricket or some other cell phone company that will provide it for them. There are people who are undernourishing their children so they can buy alcohol, so that they can party, so that they can do everything except be a responsible parent. This is true. That's not the situation for all people in poverty. In fact, it's very few. But it is true, but it's the things that we think about. The child is in poverty, but the parent is not in poverty. The parent is making a choice to live a certain lifestyle. They're not in poverty. They might be impoverished in some ways, but this is their choice. But the child does not have a choice. The child is a recipient of the choices of the parent. And in those situations, we step in and we help children. Sometimes it's through nourishment. Or sometimes when that abuse or neglect is able to be identified and proven, there's removal of that child from the impoverished situation. But we as people and as a church, we get involved and we do not allow a child to suffer at the hands of an abusive parent. And sure, helping that child for a parent that is being abusive in that way may enable a parent to continue to behave in an inappropriate way, but remember this, you cannot enable a child. And so we have to help. The child is not at fault. The child should not have to starve because a parent is inappropriately doing what they're doing. We need to step in and help a child. Even though that enables a parent to continue to do something, we still step in and help a child because a child cannot be enabled. A child needs help. A child needs rescue. A child needs a meal. There's other times as we look at people that are impoverished or people that don't have, and we as a people who have, think of ways that we can help. And I want to be honest, and I want to be as careful as I can with this, but we have to think about the choices that we make and the ways that we engage and try to help somebody. At Thanksgiving time, what is it that all these Christian families want to do to people who don't have? We want to bring them what? A giant, huge Thanksgiving dinner. And you kind of feel like when you drop it off saying, "Guy, I hope this lasts 12 months for you. Because we got all the fixings. I know you don't have anything in your cupboards, but we got the yams, baby. I mean, we got it all. I mean, this turkey is roasted to perfection." And you don't realize what statement you make when you come in on a white horse to provide a family this big, huge, extravagant meal and how they might interpret that as it comes to them. Or when we come at Christmas time with loads and loads of presents for the children, and we feel good when we deliver them. But when we make a Thanksgiving meal and when we bring loads of presents at Christmas time, we might feel good and pat ourselves on the back, but can we be honest enough to say we've done nothing for the issue of poverty? We have done nothing to help that situation. We've done nothing to identify why this family is struggling, why this family is having difficulty, and how to help in that situation. And we also don't realize the issues that we create when we have taken away the dignity of that family. How would you feel if you couldn't provide presents for your children and someone came in on their white horse and provided all the gifts for your children while you sat in the corner? Would you feel ashamed? Would you be embarrassed? There are people that report anger that they feel towards those that bring the gifts. They would rather their children learn that we have what we have and we don't have what we don't have, instead of people coming in and giving more gifts than any child should ever have, just vomited all over the living room floor, and they feel so frustrated. Their dignity is taken away from them because they can no longer provide for their family and someone else had to come in and do it for them. Or a Thanksgiving meal that they couldn't provide, but yet someone comes in and provides all this stuff, not realizing that we've taken away an individual's dignity in the process. The people are thankful for the provisions that are given, but they're ashamed and they're embarrassed and they're frustrated because they can't provide. And we must balance our desire, our personal desire to feel good, with the real good that we can do for an individual that's fallen on hard times. So what is it that we do? This is what we do. These are my rules when it comes to poverty. They're not perfect, but they have been time-tested over the years. It's how we respond here at Hillcrest to issues of poverty and issues of need. First of all, we determine if the poverty is a lack of desire in the individual or whether it is an external or another circumstance that's causing the problem. So we try to identify that. Many times we'll help pretty much open-ended at first, but if the need continues, we sit down with someone and we budget with them. We sit down and we look at their life situation. We look at what's going on, and we try to get involved as best we can to help them so this doesn't happen next week and next month and the month after that and the month after that, because we're not helping if we just enable by giving this and giving that. But why is this problem continuing? We want to know if it's a real need and if we understand what that need is. Let me give you an example here in Sioux Falls. Here in Sioux Falls, the bus routes are atrocious. You might not know that because you don't take the bus. But if you're someone that needs a bus, you cannot get a bus to go to a place that you need to go in any kind of time frame that allows you to get there. You can't go to a bus stop and expect to be to work on time when it takes you over 2 hours to get from that bus stop to your job, depending on where your job is. And the bus doesn't run throughout all of Sioux Falls and doesn't get to your work. Do you know that the food bank, that there's no bus that goes to the food bank? How do people go to the food bank to get food? Walk 6 miles? They suck it up, people. Hoof it on over and drag all your kids with you because you don't have childcare. But Sioux Falls does not catch this. Our city council sits around and they argue about this stuff. And there's a real need. which is transportation in our town to get people that don't have transportation to the places that they need to work so they can earn that $11.60 an hour, which is probably not available to them, at places that are only giving them $30 an hour because of our health care laws. They can't even get full-time work. So maybe now they're trying to work two jobs, plus they've got kids, and they're trying to do childcare, and they have no system to drive where they need to go, and the places that are giving out food are in places that they can't get to. And if you count up the amount of hours that takes for someone to do all this in a very responsible way, it's literally impossible. That's a system that we have set up in our town, and it's not acceptable. Do you understand the need that someone has and what it's going to take to solve that need? Is the need that someone has, is it a first world problem or a third world problem? Like if someone comes to me and says, you know what, I'm out of data this month. Bummer. I am not paying for data. And I also have to pay attention because sometimes people come to us and they say, I can't pay the electric bill. And I say, well, did you pay the data bill? And then the cable bill? And what other things have you been doing with your money? Because sometimes people just want to bring the one issue to us that they think will be the thing our heart will bleed for, and then we're going to ignore all the things that they're wasting their money on. So we want to challenge them on what you're spending your money on, what's important, what can you let go of. Again, first time will help without getting into those kind of details. People need additional help, we start getting into those details, finding out exactly what the need is that someone has. So is it a first world problem or a third world problem? The second thing is I remember that poverty is not a person, but it is a systemic issue. I don't believe that poverty, the majority of the time, the data that I have read, is a result of poor decisions. It's a lot more expensive to be poor than not poor. Now that sounds silly, but just the things that I mentioned about trying to get from point A to point B, the cost of all of these things, it is expensive to be poor in this town and to get out of that situation of poverty. It takes more time out of your day to be poor than it does to not be poor. It is not easily solved. It is difficult. It is messy. It's individual and it's systemic. The third thing I kind of ask myself is my help helpful or hurtful? Is what I'm doing helping this person or ultimately does it hurt them? And am I enabling them? Am I respecting their dignity? You have to pay attention to that. I also try to remember the fourth thing is that a child is innocent and cannot be enabled. I throw all out the door when it comes to children. We do the backpack program. This September, you'll have an opportunity to give to the backpack program to help feed a child that doesn't have the nourishment that they need. And if the reason why you don't want to do that is you say, yeah, but the parents are wasting the money, then why does the child have to suffer? Like, I get it, there's a broken system and parents aren't doing the right thing, but we can still step in and feed a child that needs food. And so we provide, even knowing that as we provide for that one child, we're enabling that child's parents to continue to be irresponsible, if that is the case with those parents. We don't delineate that. We don't make those decisions. We just see a child in need and a child needs help because the child is not the fault for the poverty. The child is not the fault for the parents' decisions, and a child can't be enabled. And the fifth thing is don't do for others what they can do for themselves. Ask them to be a part of the solution. Ask them to be a part of solving whatever the problem is that they have. Invite them to be a part of the assistance in some way. Retain their dignity. So who do we help? How in the world are we supposed to decide who to help and who not to help? I just gave all these rules and restrictions and my goodness. Is there a form they need to fill out beforehand? The guy panhandling on the street? Excuse me. Is your problem a first world problem or a third world problem? What's your budget? Is this what you're going to do? I would say as a follower of Jesus Christ, it's as simple as this. Help the next person God puts in front of you. And trust that the Holy Spirit is a part of that process. Just help the next person that God puts in front of you. Remember the ethic of care that we started with? We'll generally help those that we know and love and feel much less inclined to care about the suffering of those we don't know. I want to affirm that that is a reality, and at the same time, that is far from Christian. That's far from what we are called to do. We are to help those that God puts before us, knowing that we are the ones in that moment that he has entrusted to help that one person. You can't help everyone, I get it. But God isn't asking you to help everyone. He's asking you to help the one person that he puts in front of you. You don't have to worry about the problems of the whole world. I mean, you can get involved, but you don't have to worry about all the problems of the world. Just help the one person that he puts in front of you. Help the next person that God puts in front of you. You probably heard the story of the girl with the starfish. You heard this story? It's early morning, tide is out, and the beach is covered in starfish. Big ones, little ones, everywhere. And the problem is that the sun's coming out, it's going to be a hot day, and all the starfish are going to dry up, and they're going to die. And so this girl walking on the beach sees this, and she has a simple solution. Pick up a starfish, toss it back in the ocean. Ta-da! So she is walking down this beach with millions of starfish on the beach, throwing them back in. And there's a man who's fishing there on the beach, and he sees this girl that's tossing these starfish in, and he says, young lady, what you doing? She says, I'm saving the starfish. He says, I don't know if you've noticed, but this beach goes a long way, and there are millions, and you will never get to these starfish before they dry up and die. This is a hopeless cause. And the girl looks at the starfish holding in her hand, and she takes it. She tosses it back in the ocean. He says, it mattered to that one. Yeah, you can't save everybody. But God is not asking you to save everyone. He is asking you to help the next person that he puts in front of you. One at a time. What if you help the poor in your neighborhood? What if you help those that are impoverished at your work? Just at your work. The ones God puts in front of you. What if you worked with those that are poor in your own family? What if you brought a meal to the person who's on the corner asking for help? What if you started saving up right now so that come September, the third week in September, and we take an offering for the backpack program, you could sponsor one child for the year. One starfish. Not the whole masses. Not the 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 kids in need of a backpack this year, but you're just one of that. What if you signed up to be a part of the Genesis Project? Community Outreach, who we work with, is doing great things with the Genesis Project, which is helping individuals that they've identified are ready to come out of homelessness and become home livers, that live in a home, that have a place of rent, that can take care of themselves. And they have a program now, an aftercare program, which they're launching this Tuesday, announcing it. This Wednesday, I'm on a think group with them, working through some of these things. I'm on the leadership team for Empower Sioux Falls, which is looking at poverty issues throughout Sioux Falls. And we're taking on this stupid bus route thing to help solve some of these problems. And we are small fish in the big ocean. But it does matter for that one. Whoever God puts in your path, it helps that one. And that's what you and I are responsible for. I believe that if the children of God lived out the kingdom of God, there would be no poor among us. And the government would not have to take on the burden. The church would truly become the hands and feet of Jesus Christ in this world, ending the issue of poverty, addressing the issues of the poor. And the world would praise our Heavenly Father because of our good works. Amen. So my challenge to you today is to pick up a starfish. So as we close our service, this being the third week in the month, it's our benevolent week. And so the plates are going to pass for the benevolent offering to help the under-resourced in our community. It literally just happened to be this Sunday that we were talking about this. But two plates are going to pass. One is empty. That's for the benevolent offering. The second plate is filled with starfish. And if you today are going to make a commitment to help the one person in front of you, the next person God brings your way, to get involved, to pay attention, to not just blindly buy someone a Thanksgiving meal, but truly think about the issues of poverty and say, how can I help, God? Who's in front of me that I can help? If that's you, take a starfish, put it somewhere you'll remember so that you remember that it matters to that one. You can't solve the whole problem, I get it, but it can help that one. So two plates are coming. Empty, that's for a benevolent offering. Starfish, that's self-explanatory. Take one. Kids, if you want a starfish, after second service, they'll be in the back. If there's extra, you can take them. I want to be sure that those that want to make this commitment, kids, if you're making that commitment too, that's great. You can take a starfish, but I want you to connect with this, okay? And remember. Jacob.